When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm trying to elevate small talk to medium talk.
Hi, I'm Alexander Chester, and Av, isn't this podcast the Jew disease?
And I'm Av Stanensky, and I'm a luxury.
Welcome back to Pretty Good, a Curb Your Enthusiasm podcast. We are here today to discuss Season 12, Episode 6, The Gettysburg Address, which originally aired Zero Score and 2 days ago on March 10th, 2024. And we are going to get some Abraham Lincoln here. We got Robert E. Lee last year. So Ted Danson is just, you know, going through the whole Civil War booklet, basically.
Yeah, no, this is basically Larry David doing his best Ken Burns impression at this point, right?
Is that what like, it is?
Yeah, I mean, he's basically put together now two pieces of his Civil War documentary. So maybe he does have to come back for another season to finish that up.
Yeah, I would actually like to see more of A House Divided and find out exactly what kind of show it is, because it seems like it's a comedy, right? There's like a punchline at the end of every line. But then there's – which I guess, okay, well, that's why you would have Ted Danson and Lori Loughlin. They're, you know, sitcom, comedy stars.
That makes sense.
Surprising topic for a comedy, but whatever, comedy. But then, like, the big dramatic soliloquy is the Gettysburg Address. So I'm totally confused.
Well, you could still include the Gettysburg Address. And, like, it's a pretty short speech, so it's not that much of an interruption for the comedy. And, like, if you're going to do a Lincoln play, you're going to do the Gettysburg Address. So I don't think that is a point against it being a comedy.
Okay, I will say it doesn't have to be like a Jim Carrey comedy or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even if it was a Jim Carrey comedy, like, and he was playing Lincoln, like, you would probably still have the scene.
Well, I don't think in the middle of the mask, they had a emotional moment.
No, I mean, and it actually turns out great, because while he's in the middle of delivering the Gettysburg Address, somebody falls down and pees himself. So that's actually the punchline.
That is true. That was the funniest scene, actually, of the play.
Yeah.
Certainly, when you came home from that play, that's the first thing you told anybody.
Right, exactly. Yeah. The previous night, they were like, oh, wow, great Gettysburg Address. And this guy's like, let me tell you about the Gettysburg Address that we got.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think A House Divided is a great name for a show about like the complicated marriage of the Lincolns. Like just like A+ naming there. I was very pleased by that.
Yeah.
And I thought this episode overall, we won't spoil our exact ratings, but like I would say I'm pleased to see the trend of good episodes continue. Although I think I'm probably not as high on this as a lot of people out there.
Yeah, but I don't want to spoil the rankings either, but I was surprised to see some people we know declaring it the best episode of the season. And but I guess people are only going to affirmatively comment. Nobody's going to come out and say, third ranked episode of the season. So you're really just going to hear, the extremes in both directions.
Yeah, that's not getting you an
outtake. Much like our media and social media in general.
Sometimes you get in big trouble for your social media when you least expect it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It happens to all of us.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that.
Especially Jewish people. Yeah.
All right, should we talk about the Gettysburg Address?
Sure.
The episode.
The episode.
Yeah.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
So we start out, we are at Shimon's, which is the name of a very popular pizza place in Queens, but that's not where we are. We are at Shimon's Buffet, all you can eat buffet.
But let's talk about that, because it really makes no sense for a restaurant, a non-kosher restaurant, to be named. I mean, the guy who runs it is Shimon, and plenty of Israelis, most of them don't keep kosher, and they're certainly not obligated to have kosher restaurants. But like, this restaurant is... It has no correlation with what you would sort of associate with the name Shimon in any way.
Yeah, I think it's
unlike the Kosher Pizza Shop in Queens.
I think it's just his name.
Yeah. I mean, let's get into Ike Barinholtz right now, because I'm very confused by what he's doing here. When we meet him right away, I'm like, well, his name is Shimon, so I assume he's supposed to be Israeli, but this accent is in no way remotely Israeli. And I thought he was like, you know, vaguely Eastern European, indeterminate. But then, of course, we'll find out later in the episode, no, he is Israeli. So I don't like, was this Larry's idea? Was this like Barinholtz's idea? I'm just confused.
Yeah, I mean, I would also say Shimon does not strike me as a particularly Israeli name. It's more of like an Orthodox name.
Yes. You're not finding a lot of secular Jews in Israel under the age of 50 named Shimon.
There's no one in Tel Aviv named Shimon.
Yeah.
Other than
which is why it's the name of the kosher pizza place, not the non-kosher one. But yeah. Yes.
I mean, Shimon Peres had that name because he was from Europe, not from Israel. It's not something that you would expect from a modern young Israeli.
Have I said this on the podcast before about like the bubble that I lived in? I thought Peres was a Hebrew name, a Jewish name.
You thought Peres was a Hebrew name. Okay.
I knew two people when I was like 10 years old named Shimon Peres. One was the prime minister of Israel, and the other was a rabbi in my community.
Yeah. What's his real name, though? He thought his real name, right?
Who, Shimon Peres, the Israeli one?
Yeah.
He was born Persky, I think.
Yeah. They all changed their names. They didn't want people in Israel to know they were Jewish.
When they got to Ellis Island, they changed their names.
When they got to Ben Gurion Airport.
Yeah. But, and so I met this girl at some camp thing, I don't know, whatever it was, and her name was whatever Peres. And I said, oh, are you Jewish? And she was like a Catholic Latina or whatever. And she looked at me like, she's like, no, why would I be Jewish? I'm like, well, because your name is Peres.
Right.
She's like, that's a Spanish name.
I'm so
like,
you were probably very confused by the baseball player Naftali Peres.
Well, this was, you know.
Because that's a super Jewish name. If Peres is Jewish, Naftali is super Jewish, like the most Jewish person ever.
Yeah, he's Naftali, though.
Naftali, whatever.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
That's very close. Yes,
but he would come later. It is funny that both Peres I knew were not just Peres, but Shimon Peres, the exact same name.
That is interesting.
Anyway. So I'm a little bit confused by this Shimon.
If your last name is Peres, but your first name is Shimon, then you're Jewish. If it's not Shimon, probably not Jewish.
Probably not. Yeah.
Not a Jew.
Yeah. So what do you think here? Like, do you think Larry made this character Israeli? Do you think it was a Barinholtz decision? Like, how did that come to be?
So I think he made him Israeli. I think Barinholtz made him Israeli when there's no reason for him to be Israeli. Like,
yeah. Now they have to get the like Shimon plastered on the walls of that building. So it wasn't just a spur of the moment decision, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess
as we learned last week, Rabbi Edelman became Rabbi Edelman because they had printed that on the brick, and so they had to go in and change the name that they were intending to do in the script otherwise.
Yeah. The alternative is that, like, he's like a lapsed Orthodox Jew who was born and he just still goes by Shimon, even though he's like no longer Orthodox, so he has this Trefe restaurant.
Did that accent sound at all Israeli to you?
It sounded like a bad Israeli accent. I think he was going for Israeli.
Well, I mean, I know he was. It just it was a terrible Israeli accent. And, you know, Ike Barinholtz is a much better actor than I am. But, you know, that was a very bad job by him.
Yeah. So, like, he sounds kind of like a yeshiva guy who's, like, trying to speak in an Israeli accent. So maybe that works.
To me, he sounds like a yeshiva guy from the Ukraine who's trying to speak. Like,
screamed. Right. Yes.
It was very Eastern European to me. It did not sound,
I'm not even a yeshiva guy. I'm thinking more of, like, it's like a chassid.
First language is Yiddish.
Is Yiddish. So, like, he has that like cadence and European.
And by the way, the ex chassid and a chassid would very likely be named Shimon. The ex chassid
who becomes
secular would for sure at his restaurant serve crab legs and all the rest.
Yeah, and he would keep the name Shimon as opposed to like a more modern person.
Of course, he should.
Who would switch their name to secular? Like they would go with Simon now or whatever their legal name
for sure.
Whereas the chassid would keep the name Shimon. Okay, so we solved it. So he's
except that he does say he's from Israel.
Well, he's
a liar.
Maybe he's also from Israel. Maybe he's from Mea Shearim.
Yeah, but I've heard Hasidim in Israel speak Hebrew and English, and they don't sound like this guy. Anyway,
well, his English might, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Now I've confused myself. Anyway,
His Hebrew might be great, but his I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Okay, so...
And of course, he has to be Israeli, because only an Israeli would have read the Bible to know about Rachel and the Rock Birchets.
Right, only an Israeli.
These episodes are really written as if Google doesn't exist, right? They're just making up diseases.
Well, by now we know that's the point. It's supposed to be made up.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but I'm just saying, but easily fact-checkable.
Yeah.
Right, with Groat's disease last week and with the Rug Merchants right. this week.
Right. Well, that's what Larry, well, yeah. I mean, Larry says. I looked it up, but I can't find it anywhere. So.
Yeah, well, we will have to go into Sienna's motivations here, because is she lying intentionally? Is she just sort of like spur of the moment saying things?
All right. We'll get up to that.
We'll get there.
Jumping ahead for no reason.
Sure.
Okay. We're up to scene one, 10 seconds in.
Yes.
So, yeah, we talked a lot about Shimon's past. Now let's talk about his present. So, yeah, so he's like kind of like giving the stink eye to Leon as Leon is like taking all this food. And Larry comes back from peeing. We saw him peeing for a long time. And he's like, oh, my God, like you have like more food. You took another plate. Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on here? Which I don't really understand. Like, you come to an all you can eat buffet, like you're going to park down some food.
Well, we've also had this exact topic on Curb before, of course, and on this podcast when we had Hiram, the lawyer, Dan Jablons on the podcast here. Where this happened before, and Larry was on the other side. Larry's position was no, you can go back and take as much food as you want, and you can even share it with people at your table.
Right.
So who do not order the buffet.
Yeah, no, the sharing is obviously ridiculous.
But yeah, so last time they did something much worse and felt aggrieved when the restaurant told them not to. This time they're doing something that's much more within the bounds of what you should be allowed to do, and Larry's totally against Leon here.
Yeah.
Yeah, inconsistency by Larry.
Well, I think it's more that he doesn't think that he's necessarily doing anything wrong. He just thinks it's disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, gluttony is not exactly something that Leon is unfamiliar with, so
yeah.
It is probably disgusting.
This is a very pro-gluttony podcast, of course.
Yes, okay, yeah.
So Larry starts to ponder how regrettable it is, the amount of time that we waste while we're peeing. We just sit and we urinate, or we stand and we urinate, and we, you know, it must be hundreds of hours, and we just, like, flush down the toilet, literally. Instead of like, you know, we could learn something new.
Yeah. Now, you know, the scene in Seinfeld where George is, of course, explaining to Jerry and Elaine how toilet paper hasn't changed for hundreds of years.
Yes.
And then they immediately start fact checking him. Jerry's like ticking off all the ways and like Elaine sort of like supporting him, repeating. So can we do that here? Because there are many, many things that you can do while standing in front of the urinal to occupy yourself. And it's been that way for a year. There's ads in front of the urinals, right?
Right.
There's when you go to like fancier bars and casinos and stuff, they have TVs in front of each of the urinals.
Yeah.
And by the way, you don't need any of that because you have in your hand a phone and Larry can just scroll through Twitter while he's at the urinal like a regular person instead of like repeating the Gettysburg Address.
Yeah. Well, it could also could be. I mean, he's getting to the age where you need
it's
your hands more.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's a two-hand job. It's a two-hand job. Because you have to do the thing where, like, you hold the wall, which I'm hoping that's not coming soon for me. But whenever I always see old men, they're, like, holding the wall when they pee.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's about. Well, I don't know why you have to
hold the wall. Also, Larry's got the long balls. He's got to hold them out of the way so they don't get urine dripping out of them, perhaps.
Right.
Leon's the two-hander because he's in the Big Johnson Club, obviously.
Yeah.
So, yeah. okay, so that's fair.
So, yeah. You want to tell us about Leon's idea?
Oh, Leon's idea about the Prius.
Yeah.
The car that runs on human urine. I mean, we're laughing about it as if it's so absurd, but like cars run on gasoline. We just accept that because it is. But, you know, in a vacuum, it's
right. You could add like one little like hinge in the middle that converts urine into gas for somehow. And away we go.
I mean, that's like desalinization, right? Like that's like in Israel and other, you know, in other countries where they take salt water, they turn it to seawater, which was impossible for most of human history. So, yeah, maybe one day we'll be able to convert our pee into usable energy. I don't know.
Yeah, no, and look, but for Leon is by far the most excited, not about like this like incredible car. It's that now you'll be able to drink whatever you want when you're driving, like soda, give me that shit, coffee, I drink that shit up. Like, very, very excited about the possibility of.
Do you frequently feel restricted in the liquid consumption you'd like to partake in while driving because you'll have to pee?
I've definitely regretted being in situations where I, you know, drank too much and I'm in the car.
Yeah, sure. Yes, of course.
And like, I'm
but
in too much
of a
basis,
rush. You're not like, damn, I wish I could drink this.
Well, no, usually my drive is like 15 minutes and I do so with a very, very large iced coffee. So
yeah,
I'm just fine.
No, I do regret my second son urinates. So
you regret your second son?
Way. Huh?
You regret your second son?
No, but his urination requirements when we travel. I drove to Philadelphia with him to go to a Vikings Eagles game And from my home to Philadelphia, it was an under a 2 hour drive. We had to stop five times to pee, which meant like on the side of the highway. We just pulled over multiple times because it was like he couldn't even make it to gas stations. So, yeah. So I try not to let him drink in the car, but if only I had a Prius, maybe I could. They could put a little filler next to each seat in the car, so that each person can contribute to the energy of the vehicle, perhaps.
Yeah. Okay. So.
So Shimon approaches the table.
Yeah, Shimon comes and he's like, "All right, that's it. No more plates for you. You've already had four plates." And they're like, "What do you mean? Like, it's all you can eat. Like, what part of all you can eat don't you understand? It's all that we are able to eat." And he's like, "Nope, that's not how it works. I'm cutting you off, and you're banned for life," which is very harsh. Bans Leon for life from the restaurant.
Yeah. Real Homer Simpson vibes here when you see Leon coming.
Yeah. Larry, he's like, "You go, but like, you can come back. You can come back." Which Larry is like very, like, at first he's like very grateful. He's like, "Oh, good, good, good. Like, I'm still good. Yeah. I'm still good." But then he's like, "Well, anyway, like, I don't even care because the food here stinks."
Yeah.
And then they yell, "You stink," at each other for a while.
Yeah.
"You stink." "No, you stink." To which he responds, "No, you stink." And that goes on. And then Leon also doesn't seem to really care. He said, "Now, if this was a brothel, he would care." But thankfully, it's just a crappy all-you-can-eat buffet.
Yeah. Well, I guess there's more restaurants than brothels in L.A., so.
I hope so, because I know there's a lot of restaurants.
Yeah. All right. So they leave, and Leon wants dessert, which disgusts Larry because Larry says you had four plates of food. To be fair, he only had three, right? He got kicked out. He never took a bite out of plate four. So, and I have another question for you, Av. Once they get kicked out and leave, do you think that Shimon is throwing out everything on their plates, or do you think he's putting those crab legs back in the buffet?
Oh, for sure, back in the buffet.
Yeah, he's looking around, making sure nobody's going to be reporting to the health department, and yeah.
Yeah, so
and by the way, if it was, I mean, I would run a restaurant, but if I did, I would eat it all because I would never throw that out. So I would die if I ran a restaurant the first day eating everybody's leftovers.
Seems horrible.
Yeah.
It would go very poorly for me. So Leon heads off to find some dessert because, you know, he's still hungry, I guess. Yeah.
Wait for 5 minutes, he says.
And as luck would have it, while Larry's waiting for his car, who walks up? It's Ted Danson, and he's very happy to see Larry because he has a favor to ask him.
Yeah. And I said this last week because we saw this part during the trailer, but Ted asking Larry for a favor after the way he treated him last week is just insane, right? Like, the way he threw him out of his house and wouldn't buy the brick, the fact that he stole his wife, like, Ted coming to a favor to Larry of all people is, and also Ted could have asked like Jeff or something, who's also a member of that same club. But anyway. Also, we got no resolution for who was disgruntled, right? We're back at the club this week with no further issues, apparently.
We don't know who. Yeah, we don't know.
Well, except interestingly enough, who do you see will not be present at the membership meeting? Notably, Mr. Takahashi.
Oh.
So perhaps perhaps he gave in to the disgruntled claims of his poor administration, and maybe he's taken a step back.
Perhaps, or maybe he was forced out in a bloody coup.
Oh, he's gone altogether. Yeah. Well, then I think that would have to be addressed on screen. But if Takahashi has been murdered.
You think it would have been mentioned in the Gettysburg Address?
Listen, sometimes when the rulers of golf clubs and countries are dead, they just disappear and you have to Photoshop them in. But otherwise, you won't find out about it. So maybe that's what's going on with Mr. Takahashi behind the scenes.
Yeah, if it was Mr. Takahashi, they overthrew. We would have gotten a memorization of the Declaration of Independence rather than the Gettysburg Address, I think.
Oh, yes, that'd be true, yes.
So we get the whole background that he's become friends with Lori Loughlin because they're doing this Playhouse Divided, and he's wondering if Larry would be willing to sponsor her to join the golf club. And, you know, Ted goes on to explain that there's really no other option. Everybody else is saying no because, like, no one wants to, like, be associated with her because of the whole college admissions scandal.
Yeah.
So I know we talked last week that there was going to be like, you know, they mentioned to a celebrity, and I mentioned that I remember Jeff Schaefer saying before the season that there was like, you know, a celebrity that like dazzled him with their performance, but he couldn't say who. And I think obviously now this is what he was referring to, because mentioning who it was would completely spoil the storyline. So
you think it was Lori Loughlin?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, she's not like that big a celebrity if we're going to invoke the Ted Danson Club.
Would you stop with the Ted Danson?
Who's he?
He's somebody.
What about me?
You're nobody.
Why him? Why not me?
He's good. You're not.
I'm better than him.
You're worse. Much, much worse.
She's certainly not a member of the Ted Danson Club.
Certainly not a member of the Ted Danson
However,
Club.
However, the way in which she willingly portrays herself so insanely negatively is, you know, to a stronger extreme than just about any other real life celebrity has ever done on Curb.
Yeah, no, it's amazing how much she totally owns it. You know, one ups it, two ups it. I mean, she probably portrays herself as a much bigger asshole than she actually is.
Yeah, but it's very confusing. I mean, listen, that's what you do on the show. That's what Larry does, and that's what Ted Danson does, and that's what Michael Richards did. But Lori Loughlin's character is completely irredeemable in every single way.
Right. And like, it makes no sense that Ted Danson would even like wanna vouch for her.
But it also makes, why would Lori Loughlin want to play this character on this show?
Oh, well, I mean, I think she probably just thought, I mean, I read some of the backstory. They, Jeff Schaefer has been doing like weekly or biweekly interviews with the Hollywood Reporter. So basically him and Larry came up with the idea. They approached her people. Her people thought it was very funny. She said, "I'm game," and just like they went with it, and she was down for it. I mean, I guess you know she just wanted to. She thought it'd be a funny thing to own.
Yeah.
And to some extent, like you almost get points for playing yourself, you know, for being that self-deprecating and being worse than you are. Like it almost downplays your actual crime in some ways. So it's probably not bad PR overall.
Yes, the college admissions crime seems like the least bad thing she did at this point.
Exactly, It's like, yeah, who cares? Like, everyone in Hollywood is, all rich people.
Wasn't Felicity Huffman also involved in this?
It sounds right, rings a bell. Like, yeah, but like, whatever, who cares?
Yeah, so I'm just wondering, do you think that they asked Felicity Huffman also, and she turned them down?
I don't know. Well, I think they probably also wanted to be able to pull in the next sentence, which is that Ted is like, wait, you probably know her from Seinfeld. She was on.
Oh, yeah.
And Larry's like, no, that was in the last two seasons, which, of course, he would never possibly know. Like, the character Larry David would not know. Oh, that was like that was a season 9 episode or a season 8 episode that I wasn't.
Yes. Sure. But as you know, this is now Melanie Turner the first time, which you noticed immediately. And I didn't pick up on it, that was the vibe that they were bringing. And now Ted Danson, they both made a point not just to bring up that Larry was gone for the final two seasons, came back for the season finale, but they've made a face about it. So we're obviously getting something coming here.
Yeah. So my working theory at this point is that this would be awesome, I think. But what I think is that like somehow this is going to intertwine with the main storyline of the season, which is his trial.
Yep.
Which
we know we're going back to Atlanta for.
We know we're going back to Atlanta. We know at the end of this episode, Larry's being arrested for additional crimes.
Yeah, that's true.
So
really quite the rap sheet.
So I think somehow this is going to collide in such a way that like Larry is going to somehow be sentenced to redo the Seinfeld finale.
That's a sentence. That's somehow crazier than being someone's butler.
Correct. I think that's
the judge is going to say, you committed a crime. I'm so upset you have to create a new episode of Seinfeld. Why is Jerry serving a sentence here?
I haven't thought through the mechanics. I think this is how it ends up. Like somehow, like in order to deliver like retribution, and maybe it's because like maybe it's going to be like a Seinfeld style thing where like all the character witnesses are going to come in and, you know, and complain about Larry David. And then it's going to be something like, but like all those crimes pale in comparison to the worst crime of your life, which is the horrible Seinfeld finale. And like to make it amends to everyone, you have to redo the finale and do it right this time or something like that. So I think that is where we're headed.
Maybe Larry just gets sentenced to prison where he finds he ends up in the world of Seinfeld and he sees Jerry and George and Kramer in prison with. Although their sentence is only supposed to be 1 year. It'd be a long sentence.
So let me ask you this. Vote yes or no right now. Will will a combination or all of the core Seinfeld four reappear on Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yes.
I say yes too.
Yeah,
I say,
but I felt that way since yes. I've felt that way since John Gormali shared the clip from October, last October, the Jerry Seinfeld referencing it at a stand-up set, even before the season.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm planning down a flag on my specific prediction.
Yeah. I thought, yeah. So I'm not sure. They're coming back in some respect, but we'll see. You think we're getting a full episode of Seinfeld? Because that would be a little bit too repetitive. I was saying even to get any part of an episode of Seinfeld. We did that in season 7 already.
I don't even think we need to get, and I don't think we are going to get a new Seinfeld finale. I think the world of Curb is going to get a new Seinfeld finale. Maybe we'll see snippets of it, but I don't even think we necessarily see anything of it.
But the world of Curb already had a Seinfeld finale in season 7. They already had a reunion that was successful, even though Larry quit it.
That's true. They did have the
They seem to have totally forgot that because it's not been mentioned ever.
That's true. I even forgot that in that world they already kind of did this.
Yeah. And it was celebrated, right?
It was celebrated, right. Yeah. So he should already be back in good standing. That's a good point. Yeah. I don't know.
But again,
I stand by
there's
it.
No canon in the show Curb.
Yeah, Larry David also forgot that they already did the reunion.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, so Lori Loughlin, of course, she was in The Serenity Now, right? She's mm-hmm. the one that she's trying to get Jerry to express himself more.
Yeah, say it, Jerry.
What is this? Salt-like discharge?
Salty discharge, yeah. Discharge.
Okay, so Larry is going to meet Susie. The whole premise of this meeting makes no sense. Like, why is Susie calling Larry to come meet him so she can show him her billboard?
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
Yeah. But there it is. Catch as Captain. I went to catchascaptan.com on Sunday night immediately, and it just took me to a failed HBO website. It said, like, this, you know, you found a dead paywall by mistake, but click here to go back to HBO.com. But now, fortunately, it is up, and you can buy yourself a beautiful caftan in blue or pink.
Yeah.
I was just on the site purchasing his caftan.
That's right.
A momentary pause there.
That's right. I mean, they're out of stock because of all the dicks, but... They should be able to get it to me in 4 to 6 weeks, they said.
Yeah. Are you serious? Are they actually out of stock now?
No, I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
So Larry's like, all right, cool billboard, but I got to go. I have a date. And Larry like is kind of hesitant to say who it is, but turns out it's Sienna Miller. And Susie's just like, she can't believe it. Why would she want to go out with Larry? And the only thing that she sees is a silver lining. Maybe you can buy one of the caftans for her.
Yeah. Now, lest we forget, Larry went on a date with Elizabeth Banks very recently, right? He dated Lucy Lawless, right? In the world of the show, he has frequently dated very famous actresses and beautiful actresses, much younger than him actresses. So it's not completely insane, although there is a little bit of a May-December gap between Sienna and Larry. Do you want to guess the age difference between these two?
I'm going to guess she is like 38. And Larry's what, 76, right?
Yeah. So you're close. She was born in 81. She's 2 years older than us.
Oh, okay.
So they have a 34-year gap between them from 47 to 81. So a 34-year gap between Larry and Sienna. So, yeah, that's not nothing. That's a sizable gap. That's a gap of almost our entire lives. But, listen, Larry's a sex maniac. He's getting blowjobs all over the place.
Yeah, evidently.
Yeah.
So we go over to Larry's house, and we see Larry go into the bathroom, and he takes a copy of the Gettysburg Address, pins it to the wall, and starts reading and reciting it aloud. And a lot of
speeches being pinned to walls here in this season.
Yeah, we see that he even as he walks out, he's starting to memorize it.
Yeah, and as I already said, you don't need to pin this to your wall. Just read it on your phone.
Right, pull it up on your phone. Yeah, but I think he needs the hands.
Yeah, that's true.
So he wants to be undisturbed. So yeah, we have Larry and Sienna's date. They're going to the movies. They're going to see her movie, which is like a little weird.
Yeah, it's the premiere of her latest movie, but she seems pretty casual. Wouldn't she be wearing a glamorous dress? And there'd be like a red carpet.
Yeah, it doesn't really make a whole bunch of sense what's going on here.
Yeah.
They have a little back and forth.
Her seats at her own movie are good, but not quite as good as the Chinese restaurant waiter. He's got a seat slightly better. Yeah, that'll be at the play, actually.
Oh, that's
movie,
the play.
But same concept. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. As the wife of the wife of the star.
Yeah.
So they're talking about the sharing popcorn and how much, you know, whether you're dating or not. And this leads Sienna to make a reference to the Old Testament Jewish parable, Rachel and the Rug Merchants.
Very well known. Famous.
And Larry's like, I've never heard of that. And he's just got a million Larry questions about the specifics of the Rug Merchant.
Yeah. But I share all those questions with him. So, of course, Rachel is a quite prominent a character in the Bible. She's the wife of Jacob. She's the daughter of Laban. She's the sister of Leah. She's the mother of Joseph and Benjamin. But she never interacts with any rug merchants. What do we think is Sienna's motivation here? Does Sienna believe that there is really a parable of Rachel and the rug merchants in the Old Testament?
I think she does. I think she's getting confused. Like, I think she thinks Shemites is real. Like, she's in the process of converting. She's learning. Maybe she's getting some wires crossed.
But why does she keep getting all these things wrong? Is she a very bad Jew? Does she have a bad teacher? Oh, is this Rabbi Edelman's fault, perhaps?
Perhaps. Well, I know Judaism's very complicated. There's a lot of things.
But it's not. But it's easy how she digs down when she's called out on Shemites being incorrect by a veteran Jew, a Jew of 77 years in Larry David, or when she's, questioned about the perhaps inaccuracy of the rug merchant story, she doubles and triples down. So that's the curious part.
Yeah. I know someone who's a convert, and I always compliment this person that they are like a very they pass very well as a, you know, born Jew.
Honestly,
if you met them, you would they only converted fairly recently, and it would never occur to you that this person just didn't grow up like everybody else in the
community.
You don't
make them wear their big scarlet C's so we see convert. Like,
I mean, sometimes you could just tell,
if the person's extremely blonde and tall, but
the way they pronounce words or familiarity with certain things, like they're just like still like, you know,
sure,
getting
but
up
are
to
they
speed.
Necessarily different than Balchu, like people who are became observant, set more less religious Jews who became observant.
I mean, which is more so, but also, you know, many of those people at least had some exposure or understanding.
I thought what you were going to say is that the converts are the most earnest and believing of all the Jews.
Oh, sometimes.
They weren't born, they earnestly believe, but they weren't born into it. They made, this is a choice for them.
Yeah, but so what I was going to say is every once in a while, this person will slip up and say something wrong. For example, I was once at a table with them, and they said Moshe Avinu instead of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's Moshe. But it's fine.
I assume you're friends with this person.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
They don't care. Our main topic of conversation most of the time is what an idiot they are for converting. Oh. As Larry says to Sienna Miller last week, perchance may I ask you why? I would be remiss if I didn't ask.
Yeah.
So
especially for women, because women don't seem to have it too good on social media as it is. So adding Jew to it doesn't make it any easier.
Definitely a complication.
Yeah, just announce you're black and gay at the same time. Get all the bases.
So we get to Sienna's big scene in the movie. And, she's at this playground and she doesn't know where her son is and she's looking all over. And as this scene gets increasingly more and more dramatic, she continues to take bigger and bigger hunks out of this apple that she's chewing.
Yes.
Which, I don't even know. This scene is so crazy. This whole storyline is so crazy.
Yeah. So here's my question for you. Did you see Notes on a Scandal?
I did not see Notes
on a Scandal. Or Anatomy of a Scandal. Excuse me. Whatever it's called.
I did not see that either.
Okay. Because I'm just wondering, did Larry completely invent this fruit thing? Or is it something he had noticed Sienna Miller do in a movie? Because he does say that she ate a lot of fruit in Anatomy of a Scandal. But I didn't see it, so.
Yeah, I know. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, because it's a really weird thing to just make up out of whole. What's his name? The actor who just died, who played Apollo Creed.
Oh
my God, it's that time of the night.
Yeah.
Two for two. There we go. I could Google it. I could look it up, but I'm just making this more and more awkward on the podcast as we both forget something that we should obviously know. Carl Weathers. That's it, right?
Oh, the guy from Arrested Development.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. So Carl Weathers, what do you know what I'm the story I'm about to say?
No.
So he was he gets a call that they say we want you to come on Arrested Development, and he was just going to play the acting coach. He's Carl Weathers, but now he's an acting coach, just exactly it is. And Carl Weathers is like says to like Arrested, he's like, no, but he has to have a thing, he has to have a bit. So how about his bit is that he's really insanely cheap and he's always trying to like collect the food from like craft catering and stuff to like take it home because he's really cheap and he's always trying to find ways to save money and save food. And they were like, no, we don't need these. Like, no, this is going to make the character much funnier. So they sort of like shrugged and said, okay, we'll let you do that because, you know, we want your character here on the show. And so Sienna Miller's people get a call and it's like, okay, we want you to come on. You're yourself. You're the actress Sienna Miller. But you just have to constantly eat fruit in order to act. It's just, it's such a weird thing.
It's such a weird thing because like there's like a zero possibility that a scene like this would ever exist in a movie. I mean, I guess it could be based on something and they're just like hamming it up and exaggerating it. But like, it's just like so absurd.
But let's live in a world hypothetically where you have Sienna Miller. She's this incredible actress. She does incredible.
No, it's not worth it. She's not an incredible actress.
Well, hold on. That's what I'm going
to. She can only be in scenes where she's eating fruit.
But if the one limitation she has to eat fruit, I'm sure they can have a way to CGI that fruit out of it. The way they CGI like
that's a deal breaker.
Tattoos and
there's
stuff.
There's plenty of good actors.
No, but Sienna Miller's the best actor.
She's not.
Well, that's another question.
She's fine.
I don't know her from anything other than this episode. But
the whole movie now has to be built around that she needs to be eating fruit in every scene, that doesn't work. We'll get somebody else who's just as good and doesn't have crazy requirements.
Yeah.
Let them have as many crazy requirements as they want off camera.
Yeah.
On camera, we need to do the movie.
Yeah. So we think Larry just came up with this idea out of whole cloth. We need to see Anatomy of a Scandal. Hopefully one of our listeners in the Postman, perhaps, saw Anatomy of a Scandal and can contribute some commentary. I have no idea.
Didn't you eat a lot of fruit in Anatomy of a Scandal? Oh, I think this is someone on Twitter writing about Curb.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. I don't even know what Anatomy of a Scandal. Oh, it's not a movie. It's not a movie.
It's a show. Yeah, apparently there's episodes of it.
Okay, so yeah, I have no idea.
By the way, fun fact: Felicity Huffman, who I mentioned earlier, has seven sisters. None of them are Katie Huffman, former guest on both this podcast and Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah.
Very true.
All right. So let's get back into the theater. What is your take on Larry putting his jacket over like his chair?
Yeah, my ruling was weird, but fine, I think.
So interesting, because I'll say this. On an airplane, it would never be acceptable, obviously, right?
Right.
The person in front of you cannot put their jacket over the back of the chair, their chair, thus blocking your screen, your tray table, et cetera. The back of the chair belongs not to the person sitting on the front of it, but to the person sitting behind it. Same at synagogue, right? The back of your chair is where they rest their book. You don't get to cover it up back there. So I think for an individual chair, like in your house, but like when there's rows of seating, I think Larry's actually in the wrong here.
Yeah, you definitely never see it. So that suggests it's wrong. Yeah. But like what he does is like completely not intrusive to anyone. Like it's this like little coat. It's like completely flat.
No, but hold on. But clearly it is because when the waiter will do it later. Because he doesn't do the exact same thing.
No, he does a bad thing. Larry tells him you didn't put it.
So you're allowed to do it, but only if the. I mean, then you have to start measuring the knee length. You can't put a
big coat. Like
so you have to start measuring how much space is there between the rows and this specific seating arrangement. It's too complicated.
If you have like a jean jacket or something or a light coat or something like that, you could just lay on the back and it makes no difference to the person's space. That's very different than if you're like throwing a over the back of it and it's taking up.
Yeah, at a movie theater as an example, I feel like. And again, it depends. Some of these movie theaters, they have these like massive gap between rows where you can like go lay flat. Then it's fine. But
if you're. Like at the movies, you just carry your coat, like you put it in front of your feet or under the chair or on your lap. Yeah. Like that's just the etiquette of a movie theater.
Yeah.
But as I said, I think the exact example of what he does, like this person should not care. It doesn't impact them at all.
Well, we don't get to see a camera angle from that. If you notice, the camera's from the front the whole time.
Yeah, but we see his jacket. Like,
Yeah, but if the guy's knees are bumping into it, which it seems to be the case, then you can't do it because you're taking like you, right. I disagree with you here. I'm with the guy in the background.
Okay.
Yeah. Listen, the back of your seat belongs to the part like the it's in there. It's in their vision space. That's where there is. They could have a cup holder there, depending on the seats, right? Like if it's at a stadium or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think Larry's in the wrong here. But anyway.
Yeah.
Like,
so,
he'll get mad and he'll say, like the neck of the guy in front of him would be on his jacket if he put it in the row in front of him. But the shoes of the guy behind you that are someone else's shoes are much worse than someone else's neck. Right. So anyway, I don't know.
You know, Sienna like cuts them both off. She says, you know, just like, you know, take your coat, like shut up. And the guy's like, oh, by the way, you're very good in the movie.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, so we see about Larry doing some more work on the Gettysburg Address. I think like this episode was like 37 minutes. I think like 9 of the minutes was just the Gettysburg Address.
Yeah, did you have to memorize the Gettysburg Address?
No.
My dad told me that he did when he was a kid, but I don't remember having to do so. I do remember we had to memorize memorizing anything is stupid. It's a waste of time. But we had to memorize the Ten Commandments actually, the full thing, like the whole thing in Hebrew.
Yeah.
Oh, you did that also?
No, no. You have to memorize the preamble to the Declaration of Independence once.
We had to memorize in fifth grade and sixth grade. One year we had to memorize 54 prepositions, and then the other year we had to memorize 56 prepositions. And I like, if you can't even agree with how many propositions there are, we don't even be memorizing them.
Propositions or prepositions?
Prepositions. Aboard, about, above, beneath, beyond, beside.
You could put them at the end of a sentence now.
Yeah. Did you ever? Yeah, I heard that's true. Did you ever have to memorize those? That was the dumbest thing ever.
No.
We also memorized there was 23 parts of speech, another part of speech. We had to memorize that. There was 23 of them. I think it was like A, E, and I don't know, whatever. But my kids' schools don't seem to be too much on memorization anymore, so that's good.
Yeah.
They finally learned that that's not a way to learn. All right, so do we go to the membership meeting next?
Yeah, so we go to the premiership meeting, and Larry gets up on our behalf, and he delivers his own version of the Gettysburg Address, where he tells the history of the golf club. You know, they used to not allow women, but now they do.
It was founded exactly 47 years ago, conveniently.
Exactly.
Here's my question. The whole point of the Gettysburg Address, the reason why it is among the most famous speeches, if not the most famous speech of all time, is because of the fact that it is but 272 words long. Right. You get up there, you say the whole thing, you sit
down. The fact that one could memorize it is what makes it famous.
Yes. And yet, Larry speaks for so long. We don't even know how long he's speaking for, but the camera continuously sort of cuts, then comes back to show like that it's like a later on. Like Larry's speech is as unlike the Gettysburg Address in every way, except for the inspirational nature, I guess. So very strange how these people are so inspired by his speech. Because to me, the most important thing about a speech is brevity, right? If I'm in synagogue and the rabbi's talking for 15 minutes, it's not moving me no matter what. You got to get me in the first 10 or 5.
Yeah. He hands off, you know, this club of the people, by specific people, specific people, should allow this additional specific person.
What about when he sheds a tear when he mentions the pickleball court?
The pickleball court. Standing O, everyone loves it, membership approved.
Did you notice in the audience there, I thought, and I sent you a screenshot of this, I thought one of the people might have been Patricia Heaton, but IMDb, which is fully updated, does not list her. So, and it'd be weird, you know, for her to show up at the scene and do nothing and not be credited on IMDb. So,
yeah. So, this could be one of those things where Mr. Takahashi has no say in the membership. Like this, like it could be like the members approve the members.
But it was pretty clear that Mr. Takahashi was a dictator running things.
But maybe he's just.
Been deposed to power somewhat because of the disgruntled.
He could be the manager of the club, but not the owner of the club. Meaning, like he could still ultimately is accountable.
You don't think he's the owner? The whole theme of everything is based around his beloved Black Swan.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. I don't think he's an employee. I think he's the owner also.
Yeah. But, okay. Fine. Yeah. So Larry gives.
Yeah, I think clubs don't usually have owners, right? So.
That's what I'm saying.
But they're usually made by their membership, so yeah.
Right. The members like kind of own the club, like the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So
we see. So we meet Lori Loughlin now out in the audience, out in the waiting room, excuse me.
And Larry basically explains to her, like, you're basically in. The only thing left to do is you got to play a couple rounds of golf with me and the committee members. But, like, you know, it's a formality. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, that's so amazing. Thank you, Larry. I can't thank you enough. He's like, you know, people say that, but I have a feeling this is going to be the last time you're thanking me.
Yeah.
I feel like you will have thanked me enough at a certain point. So as we're driving home, Larry is passing by the billboard, and lo and behold, what has happened? There is a big graffiti of a dick going into Susie's mouth.
Yes. And that is a very large penis.
Yes. Cut to,
like, 50 feet long. I don't know. It's big.
Back at Jeff's home, and Susie is hysterical.
Yeah.
She cannot believe it. Why would they do that? And the worst part of all, her hand is cradling the balls. And Jeff
The way that Larry and Jeff are, like, dying as they're describing it.
Jeff is giggling like a schoolgirl.
Yeah. Most delightful part of the episode, for sure, for me.
And Susie's like, this is not even funny. I don't even give blowjobs.
Yeah.
Which we know is not true. Yeah.
Well, now it's possible that because the last time that we saw her give a blowjob, it ended with a car accident, she has quit the blowjob game.
That's true.
Although I would say just maybe don't give them to Jeff while he's operating a heavy machinery. But, you know, you can still do it in the better. I guess, yeah, she has quit them altogether. So too bad for Jeff. Actually, not really too bad. He's getting his own blowjobs on the side, as we know, all the time.
So, yes, Larry's like, you know, would it kill you to give some blowjobs? And she's like, you know, why don't you just focus on your new single life with all your, you know, blowjobs you're getting from everyone? So they want to hear about
everyone, not from Sienna.
Well, obviously you're not getting any from Sienna. I'm sure she's not giving you blowjobs.
Yeah.
So Larry tells them that, unfortunately, since their date, he texted her a couple times, but he hasn't heard back from her. And Susie's like, yeah, well, obviously it's over. You're an old fucking man.
Yeah.
She obviously eventually realized that. And, you know, and Larry's like, but she started it. Like, he's like, well, now she's ending it. Susie couldn't be less sympathetic here. So when Susie walks out, Jeff tells Larry that, like, he actually just heard that from the director that she's actually, like, not doing great on this movie, and, like, she might get fired. Like, she's a disaster on set. She's just, like, ruining the movie with her bad performance, and it's a real problem. And Larry's like, that's interesting. I wonder if me pointing out that she had this, like, habit of, like, eating too much fruit is affecting her performance. I don't know why his mind goes there, but it does, I guess. And he'll end up being right. But
yeah, well, that's a common thing in Curb, right? That somebody comes up with a convoluted thing there's no way possible they would think, but it ends up being correct. So
yeah. So Larry goes to pee, and of course he starts reciting the Gettysburg Address, and Susie tells him to shut the fuck up.
Yes.
So Larry is, you know, now he's heading home from Susie and Jeff's, and as he's on the road, he passes by Shimon. So he stops, he pulls over, and he wants to go have a chat with Shimon. Shimon is, like, very much in an anxious rush, so, like, he can't even stand still. Like, he's, like, jogging in places. Yeah. He talks to Larry.
Yeah.
Like,
well, you gotta keep the heart rate up.
Gotta keep it going. And Larry's like, you know, listen, I really think it's unfair that you banned Leon. After all, the sign says all you can eat. And Shimon's like, that's not how it works. Like, let's say I have a sign in my house that says, you can masturbate as much as you want.
Yeah.
But if I see you masturbate 4, 5, 6 times, eventually I'm going to be like, okay, it's too much. Stop masturbating. And Larry's like, no, I would have no problem. If the sign says masturbate as much as you want, you masturbate 100 times. That's fine.
Shimon comes from the Larry David school of find a winning argument and then find the absolute worst possible way to argue it so that you somehow lose, even though you're correct.
Yeah.
Because what the hell is he talking about here?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, this whole masturbation thing is crazy. Terrible example. So Larry's like, you know, they're just arguing back and forth. And the result is the lifetime ban is now extended to Larry, not just Leon. And even when he calls Shimon back to be like, hey, like, have you ever heard of this Rachel and the rug merchants?
Yeah.
Shimon, like, pretends
you're
that
from Israel. Therefore, you must be knowledgeable about the Bible. Therefore, which again indicates how much research Larry's actually done.
Shimon, like, looks like he's going to possibly try to help, but then he's like, no, you're banned. And he runs off.
Yeah. He says, I never heard of a Rachel and I never heard of rug merchants. Well, you did hear of Rachel. because she's right. got a pretty prominent role in there.
Yeah. If you don't know Rachel, then you're not very knowledgeable.
The Bible expert.
Bible.
Exactly.
Yeah, she's one of the bigger characters. So yeah.
Kramer, now he's a character.
Indeed. He sure is. That's a Simpsons line where Lisa, Homer's talking about how much he loves Sherlock Holmes. Mm-hmm. He wants to be like him. And like, Lisa's like, but Dad, Sherlock Holmes is a character. He sure is, Lisa. He sure is. So yeah, we go to the golf club and Larry and Laurie are getting ready for their golf. And he sees that he's getting the golf cart ready, but he's like, oh, you know, today's, you know, we should just walk. Like, it's, you know, there's like restrictions everywhere. It's just going to be too much of a pain in the neck to ride today. And she's like, don't worry about that. I got this special blue flag. We can drive anywhere we want. Mm-hmm. And Larry's like, wow, how did you get that? Like, that's crazy. Like, you need to have a doctor's note for that. And she's like, well, I have Epstein-Barr syndrome, according to one hematologist. Yeah. Which is like a very weird thing to like throw in. Like, of course, like she's like a jerk, but like yeah. she also like gives herself away constantly.
Yeah, again, from the Larry David School of or she won't even remember what disease she has the next time it's brought up.
Right.
Just say,
yeah, I have Epstein-Barr disease. Period.
Yeah. Are you familiar at all with Epstein-Barr?
No, not at all.
So, yeah, so Larry wants to know if it's a Jew disease. It's not a Jew disease, but nor does it seem to be something that would earn one a handicap license plate or a blue flag on your golf cart. So I asked Dr. Jen, and Jen said, yeah, it causes mono. It's a type of herpes. And that didn't really help me. So then I started Googling it, and, yeah, it is a type of herpes. It doesn't at all make any sense why this would be the kind of thing, why would deem you disabled, that you would need the handicapped spot in the parking lot, et cetera. However, just this evening, right before we started podcasting, I was watching Sopranos season 2, episode 1 with my wife, and which is the episode where we meet Janice, Tony's sister, who we will later meet on Curb, the same actress when she she's married to the inventor when we're in New York in season 7, right?
Yeah.
And that's not 7. That's anyway. And Janice explains that she is disabled and is considered disabled and therefore gets fully reimbursed for some government programs because she has Epstein-Barr.
Uh-huh.
So okay. Perhaps it is a disease that qualifies you this way. I'm not exactly sure why. But in terms of Larry's question, is it a Jew disease? I would have assumed that the Epstein from the title is Jewish, but I looked up the bios for both Epstein and Barr, and nothing identifies either one of them as Jewish. So
yeah,
not a Jew disease.
But that wouldn't make it a Jew disease. Usually the diseases are named after like, the person that discovered it. Like, so
yes.
A Jew disease Jews have it, not if a Jew discovered it.
Yeah, but again, there's nothing on the Epstein-Barr description that says that it's more prominent among Jews, either they're Ashkenazi, Sephardi, or otherwise. So
cool.
Yeah, so not a Jew disease, but apparently a disease that does qualify as disabled. So, and if you have Epstein-Barr and I have been inaccurate, I apologize. But we promise inaccuracy on this podcast.
We do?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Anyway, all right.
I didn't think we promised anything.
Yeah, so Laurie on the golf cart, on the golf course, is terrible. Really obnoxious in every way. As I said before, I really don't understand why she, like, this character has no redeeming qualities. She's so unlikable. And credit to Lori Loughlin that she portrays herself that way, but I'm not sure why.
Yeah, so we're at the final hole, and Lori has just sunk a big putt to put them in position, and it's all down to Larry to win the game. And Larry lets everybody down, well, mostly Lori. Lori and Larry, quite a pair. So they lose the pair. They lose the bet. I guess they bet. I guess you bet when you play golf. Is that like a standard thing that you're always betting?
I mean, when you're really rich, I don't know.
I feel like on TV they're always betting when they play.
Yeah, I'm not a golfer. I'm the wrong one to ask.
Me neither. At the valet on the way out, she's like, all right, we lost, but like, you know, good day, good game. Thanks for your help again. And, to say thank you, she offers them tickets to the opening of the play. And Larry's like, oh, like, you need to go give your valet to the guy over there, your ticket. And she's like, oh, no, don't worry. I got one of these. And she points to the handicap sticker on her Corvette and gets in and like zooms off. Like, she's like going like 0 to 80.
Yeah. Again, zero redeeming qualities on this person.
Yeah. They're just like, what the hell is with this person?
Yeah.
We then have this terrific montage of Larry peeing.
Maybe this answers the question. I said, why would Ted Danson have asked Larry to sponsor her? Maybe because Ted Danson knows that she's such an asshole that only an asshole like Larry David would be seen as a.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah. So we get this montage. Larry's in various bathrooms, various roadsides, and he's always reciting the Gettysburg Address as he pees. A few times we see other people giving him like weird glares. But it ends with him at a Lakers game as an entire crowd of people in the bathroom, you know, watches with bated breath, and then gives him a huge applause and a USA chant when he finishes.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Really great stuff. I love that. This montage here I thought was wonderful. That night we see Larry and Leon pull up in a car outside Shimon's restaurant. Leon jumps out, grabs a can of spray paint, and right before the word all, he writes the word not. Not all you can eat. Haha, that'll show him.
Yeah. The idea that you could drive up in your own vehicle without any kind of face covering and tag a restaurant in LA in 2024 without being caught on camera seems a little hard to believe to me.
Yeah, you probably would.
Although, unfortunately, not hard to believe is the idea that an Israeli-owned restaurant would be victimized by graffiti in 2024. However, yeah, pleasantly enough, this graffiti deserves kudos for being accurate and not remotely anti-Semitic.
I think
all-you-can-eat restaurants should be allowed to have amendments for the Homer Simpsons, the Leon Blacks of the world.
Yeah, right? I hear you.
Yeah. You're going to put this guy out of business.
Yeah, I think I probably told this on the last time, but like there used to be a sushi place we went to in the city that was all you could eat, but they charge you a penalty per piece of sushi left over at the end. It was like $1 a piece.
Yeah.
To disincentivize bad, you know.
Yeah.
Bad ordering. Yeah. So like we used to like way over order, and then like we would like kind of try to like mash up the sushi on our plate, like move it around, like make it look like
there's no world in which I wouldn't eat every piece.
I mean,
which is why buffets are very bad for me.
I mean, you say that there, but you know, there is an amount of sushi where you stop.
So I was in Vegas for a bachelor party, and we went to one of those like fancy breakfast buffets that they have there, except in my case, because, you know, I'm kosher, there wasn't so much I could eat, but they had sashimi grade sushi. So the breakfast was like $50. So I got so many plates of sushi, just this one like cut of salmon, because I wanted to make sure to get my $50 worth, which I'm sure I did. So
yeah, awesome. So back at Jeff's house, and Susie just got off the phone with her CFO. Apparently, she has a CFO for this business.
Yeah.
Like, this is a very, advanced business. Business is booming, so it's a good thing she has a CFO. Otherwise, no one would be able to know that. Yeah. And Larry's like, it's the billboard. It's like, it's obviously the billboard. And it's obviously the billboard. Susie's like,
but listen,
denial.
There is no way they would leave that tick up for 2 weeks. Like, who's running this billboard company, Leon?
She
called the billboard company right away. She said that she did that on day one. That, you know, maybe not that afternoon, but within 2 weeks it would be removed or cleaned or whatever. You'd have to put another dick back up there. They wouldn't just leave the dick up there permanently.
So she's in denial. He's like, no, it's like obviously you didn't sell anything for months, and then all of a sudden there's dicks and sales are through the roof. Like, it's obviously the dick. She's like, you know what you should do? You should probably get a second dick. Now I think this is premature. I think you need to let the original dick run its course.
Yes.
I think you don't want to overplay your hand, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. Ob doesn't want to introduce the second dick just too soon.
Well, not yet. Wait, you know,
let the first dick enjoy itself.
When the first dick starts to like run out of steam and it's like, okay, everyone's over that.
Then
you add the second dick. Then you add the dick in the ass. Like, you would to mix things.
Yeah, Jeff wants two dicks in Susie's mouth, one dick up her ass, and jizz.
He's going way too fast. Way too fast.
Yeah,
like
that's like a 10th anniversary thing. Not like the first month that the billboard
set up
there.
Let some organic marketing happen for a little bit.
Yeah.
you're going too strong. So yeah, Susie's like, I bet Warren Buffett never had to make a business plan involving jizz on his face. Yeah. But she's going to consider it. Because what better is she?
Yeah.
So Larry goes to visit Sienna at her trailer. She really doesn't want to see him, but he begs her way in, and he apologizes about the coat. And she reveals that, like, she's really having a hard time with this role. She doesn't know what's wrong. And Larry looks around the trailer and points out that there is not a single piece of fruit in sight.
Yeah, no mulberries, nothing.
And Sienna's
like, "Do you know what a mulberry is, of, by the way?"
I definitely did not.
Yeah. Oh, so, but just we know that Sienna ate them, or that Larry identified her eating them.
Yeah. So she's like insisting, I don't need fruit. I don't even care for fruit. I'd be perfectly happy to never see a piece of fruit again for the rest of my life.
Sounds like Tom Brady.
But when he hands her a pear, we cut to her doing her next scene and she completely nails it. Again, munching away at that apple, that pear as she acts.
And no one, no director, no cinematographer, nobody's like, wait a second. Sienna, why are you holding a pear?
Right. And why can't we hear any of the words you're saying? Yeah. Oh, it's because there's huge chunks of pear in your mouth.
Yeah, or the actress who plays her mother-in-law. Yeah. Who gets the pear all over her body.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a success. She goes to hug Larry. She can't thank him enough. And Larry's like, by the way, I looked into this hall, Rachel and the Rug Merchants, doesn't exist. I can't find anything everywhere. She's like, that's so weird. Cause like, I'm like, I could swear I read it in a book. And Larry's basically like, are you sure it was a book? Are you sure it wasn't nothing? And he also doesn't know that the word schmites exists. He can't seem to find that anywhere. And that too, it seems she has made up. And then he really crosses the line. He starts talking about her hair because she's talking about how her wig is uncomfortable. And he's like, you know, I don't think I even know what color your hair is. I've seen you in blonde. I've seen you in red. I've seen you brunette. What are you? And she storms off, revealing that she has alopecia.
Yeah. Now, is Larry supposed to have known this?
I don't think she's supposed to have known this. And it's very weird because this very much connects to what we're going to see in a couple scenes in terms of what the show does, but they don't actually connect the scenes. Do you know what I'm saying?
In terms of what? What do you mean?
So in two scenes, we're going to see Jeff and Susie at the movie theater, and a guy gives Susie a hard time about the dicks. Yeah. And Jeff goes and he does a Will Smith impression.
Oh, keep my – oh, I didn't even pick up on that at all.
Yeah, that was totally for sure parodying Will Smith.
Wait, you think that is Will Smith?
What?
You think that's a Will Smith reference?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I missed an obvious Donald Trump reference in episode one, but
– he literally says, keep my wife's business out of your motherfucking mouth.
But then why does – but the other guy, like, instead of sort of – and I was confused by the other guy's behavior. He didn't do the Chris Rock lean in, which, of course, is because Chris Rock was on national television or international global television and had no idea what was coming. There's no way you could do what Jeff does here on the street outside a theater and get away with it. And, like, he – like, the little charade where he says, the count of three, turn to the right. Like, you come up to a stranger, even if they insult – especially if they insulted your wife, and you grab their collar, and there's immediate violence.
Yeah, right. The guy wouldn't go long, right? He would be pushing back much faster. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But I think 100% that's supposed to be a Will Smith joke.
Yeah, if the wording's exactly the same, you're probably right. Yeah,
but and I totally missed that. The whole premise of that thing in real life was Chris Rock was making fun of Jada Pinkett Smith for playing bald.
Because she's bald, yeah.
Right. So I don't know why they didn't connect these two.
Yeah, that is strange, yeah. There must be a deleted scene there that we're missing or something. Right. There's got to be something connecting it.
I
until you brought it up right here, I didn't even put two and two together.
Yeah.
It's a different person. One is Susie. One is Sienna, who's being insulted. Susie's not the one with alopecia, so all very confusing.
Yeah. So we back up a little bit. So we have a scene before that in the golf club. Larry and meets Lori. Can't believe that she was able to pull off a 10:45 tea time. And she explains, listen, they just like me at the front desk. I must have charmed them.
Yeah.
But then when Larry goes to look into it, because he's of course suspicious already of Lori, we find out that she gave him 50 reasons to give her the
50 is not at all a lot,
right, for a club like this. A club
filled with these super rich people who pay like the exorbitant fees, right. They probably pay.
Larry would be like, oh, I could just get a good time by paying $50 in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so then we see that her cheating behavior continues on the course when it's time for everyone to give in their score, and she claims that she got a 5, even though seems like that can't possibly have happened because she hit her ball into the woods, and I guess she was supposed to take some sort of penalty. Again, not helpful to not know how golf works, but...
But she's definitely a cheater.
She's definitely a cheater. She claims she just got a good lie, and Larry says there's definitely a prick.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a good lie.
Yeah.
Good lie indeed. And that's when we see that Susie's billboard has the 2 dicks.
Yeah.
So do we think that Susie is responsible or somebody out in the wild did this?
Yeah, it's out in the wild. Once you see one dick, you feel free to add your own.
Okay, so this wasn't Susie following Jeff's
no, I don't Larry's think so.
And actually calling up the billboard company and say, actually, add a second dick.
Yeah, I don't believe so.
So yeah, so then we got the Will Smith scene that that we talked about already. And Larry fills in Susie that you're going to make a fortune now. Right, because he's telling her. She doesn't know about it. And the second dick in her mouth is huge. It's going to be huge for business. It's going to be good for everybody. So Larry heads inside, and he takes his seat next to Cheryl, which makes me ask, why is he sitting next to Cheryl?
Yeah.
You were focusing on the fifth stuck guy being in front of Cheryl, but like, why is like Larry got his ticket through Lori Loughlin?
Yeah. Well, it's the friends and family section.
Well, where's her family? And they're and as you pointed out, they're like in the third to back row. Larry.
Yeah.
No, yeah. No, Lori Loughlin is not Larry's family.
Lori gave her family tickets. Something. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Correct.
Yeah. And as we said, sitting right in front of him is the waiter from last week's episode. The guy from Fish Stuck.
Yeah, Himson Chan. Nice to see him again.
Yeah. And
I did not expect the Fish Stuck story to return and be a 2-episode story arc.
Yeah, I did expect it to be, but only because I knew that Himson Chan had a 2-episode arc season, because that was mentioned in the media. And we're hoping that he is going to have a 1-episode arc this week on The Postman. So there'll be no Postman at the end of this episode. So if you haven't gotten your Postman in yet and you still want to, and you have any questions for Himson Chan of Fish Stuck fame, I believe he was also in an episode of I Think You Should Leave. So we covered that before. So maybe we'll have an opportunity to talk to him about that as well. So he hangs his coat, but he's got a big coat, unlike Larry's little coat, and he hangs his in such a way that it completely interferes with Larry's ability to sit.
Well, in Larry's opinion, but Larry also does believe that, you know, the rule is for him but not for others in many other circumstances.
Yeah, that's true. And when we get up to the climax of the play, which is when Ted is delivering the Gettysburg Address, Larry is realizing that he's having a Pavlovian response. He's trained his body to associate the Gettysburg Address with peeing, and he's just got to go really badly. And Cheryl's like, you can't go now. This is the biggest part of the play. But Larry just can't take it anymore, and he starts trying to walk out, but his foot gets stuck, and he falls over, crashes onto the floor, and pees his own pants all over himself. As everybody watches on in horror.
Yeah. Although, fortunately for Larry, there doesn't seem to be real consequences for him urinating himself in public here over the course of the rest of this episode. We'll see next episode if that changes, but.
Yeah. So we end off with Larry driving home, and he sees that the billboard for the new Sienna Miller movie has been vandalized in much the same way as Susie's was, namely there's a giant dick on it. And so he makes a U-turn to try to get a better look when he gets pulled over and questioned by a cop. She notices that there's a box of spray paint in his backseat and wants to know what is that? Why do you have that? Which I feel like he's allowed to just say, go fuck yourself. Like you have like no probable cause that like there's nothing suspicious about
yes
spray paint. Like I could have it for a million reasons. I don't have to answer this.
Not
only does Larry, you know, get defensive at all, he's like, I'll tell you exactly why I have that. And he explains that it's because him and his friend vandalized the restaurant last night. Which the cop is just like, you know, you just admitted to another crime.
Yeah.
And as she pulls him away and starts arresting him again, Larry realizes that he probably now thinks that he's the one that vandalized the billboard. And she seems to be placing him under arrest for that as well, as our episode ends.
Yeah, and the episode ends with him screaming. The last line of the episode is, I didn't know she had alopecia,
which makes absolutely no sense. It's not being discussed in any context whatsoever, except now that you brought it up to me, clearly I did miss something. The alopecia and the whole Will Smith of it all must have been more of this episode, and something was taken out. And I'll say that I didn't even pick up on it at all on my first viewing or my second viewing. Now you mentioning it here makes me like the episode even a little bit less, because there's just such an obvious, it's just so flawed and poorly designed. And, you know, there's a big hole there.
Keeve had a note. He said that he thought that they should have connected the peeing to Sienna Miller, that like Larry teaches her that like a good way to like help memorize your lines, or, you know, is to, you know, memorize them while you're peeing.
Okay, sure, but that still doesn't address the alopecia
ness
of it. It's just, yeah, so. I hate to say it, but my ranking for this episode is not going to be very high. But for coming into this podcast, I'll tell you where I had it. I had it ranked 73rd out of 117. I said it was pretty, pretty, pretty good. That's 2.5. Definitely a step down from the last 3 weeks. Definitely the least funny episode since we got to L.A. Way too much about Lori Loughlin, who I don't really care about, being an unrepentant asshole for no reason. You know, the only real LOLs for me this episode were Jeff and Larry talking about, you know, the dicks on the billboard. So I thought it was a slightly below episode of Curb. And that was before this podcast, and now I think I'm even lower on it. So I may have to take a look and possibly reduce it from 2.5 even to 2. But for the moment, I'll leave it at 2.5.
Okay. I'm a little bit higher than you. I'll say this episode is pretty, pretty, pretty good. I think it's a 3 out of 5, right down the middle of the road episode. I thought there was a lot of things in this episode that really worked, and then some stuff that really didn't work. The whole fruit thing with Sienna Miller thing I thought was complete trash. It made no sense. It was just completely absurd. I thought the Gettysburg Address stuff was all very funny. All the Lincoln stuff was very good. The Lori Loughlin stuff was A+. I think there was enough really good stuff there to really like, but I think it did get a little bit dragged down by the Sienna Miller plot line. The blowjob billboard also pretty good. So you know what? I'm gonna up it to a pretty good 3.5. I actually talked myself a little bit higher.
Symmetric after I threatened to lower mine, he raises his.
Yeah, no, actually, the more I talked it out, I went a little bit higher. So I'm going to say 3.5. For me, that's like a top 50 episode, but, not an incredible one. But I after, you know, a kind of a weak start for me to the season, the first two episodes were 2.5 average. Since then, we've been averaging about a 4, maybe a little bit less, so, you know, 3, 3.5, and a 4.5. So
does it worry you at all that we're going back for the finale to the scene of the first two episodes, which we thought was a little weaker?
No, because in general, Curb ends of seasons are stronger than beginning of seasons. I feel like Curb often has like those table setters that are not the best. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we know often they work backwards. So I feel like they feel very good about their endings more often than their beginnings.
Yeah.
And sometimes they just work backwards to get to where they want to go. And, you know, it's not always the best as a result.
Yeah, even season 4, which we've frequently said is the best season, Mel's Offer, the first episode of that season, is one of our bottom 10 episodes all time of the show.
Yeah, very true.
So, yeah, the show does end better than it starts usually in general.
Oh, come on, be a come-with guy.
Who is your come-with guy?
Yeah, it's got to be Lori Loughlin here. She is so awesome in this episode, just, you know, both the real person, the character, the fact that she was game for this is tremendous. She just like hits it out of the park. Like, I think this is like an iconic Curb guest star role. It's like the type of cameo that like only Curb can pull off, because like people wouldn't do this on other shows. Like they get the opportunity to play themselves and like be almost like their best and worst versions of themselves at the same time. And I just love that she just like owned this and did this, and she really nailed it. So yeah, she's a come with guy.
Yeah. I really saw this episode very differently than a lot of people, I guess. I hated Lori Loughlin. I hated every part of it. It didn't make sense to me. I didn't understand why they wanted her. I didn't understand why she agreed to do it. I'm shocked. That's why I was so shocked and disappointed when you said this, you think, was the iconic guest role that was referenced by Jeff, because I thought we were getting somebody much bigger, much more interesting, something I would actually enjoy. I hate to hate on Lori Loughlin here, but she's a zero to me. She was on Full House 40 years ago, and what else has she done? And then she, who cares? I don't know. So I watched episode 2 twice all the way through, and I had no idea who to pick for the come with guy. I had nobody. And so I thought ultimately I'll give it to Larry himself. He keeps coming up everywhere. He's the come with guy everywhere. He comes with to his own detriment, right? To endorse the awful Lori Loughlin at his club, to the play where he'll urinate himself, to help Leon graffitiing Shimon's, which will lead to his arrest, to numerous urinals at each of which he'll perform the Gettysburg Address. So I will give it to Larry, which is now the third consecutive season where I gave Larry one come with guy award. You have not given him one since season 9. Still in third place overall between Jeff and Leon, but Larry is the come with guy for an episode that I'm starting to hate on more and more. That's it, Av, officially reducing it from a 2.5 to a 2, for the record. And I'll have to figure out where it goes in my overall rankings. But yeah, I've realized as I'm talking myself through this that I really don't like this episode. And part of the reason is that when we get to the fucking asshole...
You're a fucking asshole. That's what you are.
I was like, well, who am I going to pick for fucking asshole? Because it's too obvious to pick Lori Loughlin because there was no nuance to her character. Her character was so despicable in every way that I don't want to reward the show or the character by naming her the fucking asshole, even though she so clearly is one. Shimon is an asshole because he doesn't honor the all you can eat. Larry is literally called a quote fucking asshole by Sienna, after the alopecia thing, but I'm going to give it to Sienna. Sienna's my fucking asshole. She converts to Judaism and then tries to gaslight other Jews into believing her made up Yiddish and her Bible stories.
We only believe Bible stories that somebody else made up.
Yes.
That we made.
We need in this time of, we need unity. We need achdut between the Jewish people. We don't need Sienna Miller making up lies, calling Larry a fucking asshole. How is he supposed to know she had alopecia anyway? So to me, Sienna Miller is the fucking asshole.
Yeah, it sounds like you're in direct violation of a commandment to love the convert and treat them well.
Yes, that's true. But you have a real life convert in your life. You're always making fun of. So we're even.
No, but they're okay with it. Yeah, I say I think you were on the right track that, you know, Lori Loughlin is obviously such a fucking asshole. Therefore, I say that the fucking asshole is Ted Danson for putting Larry out by trying foisting. To make him go to bat for yeah. foisting her onto him. That he now he's going to be held accountable for this fucking asshole.
That's not bad. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, that's what I got.
All right. Is it time for the postman?
It is not. It is not. Yeah, we're gonna record the postman on Thursday night. So you still have time to get those in, as we said before. Send them to curbpostman@gmail.com. As a reminder, you should also always rate and review us. And I say that you should give us 5 stars, which in our ranking system means
pretty.
Get a life, Jews!